What's your perception of how Conor McGregor is viewed in Ireland?
How he's viewed?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea how he's viewed in Ireland, but I can tell you this, he's a massive superstar globally.
In terms of his reputation here, I guess it wouldn't be out of line for me to say that things were affected negatively by what happened with regards to riots in Dublin before Christmas. And I know that some of his social media posts were investigated by Gardaí with regards to inciting riots. Is that sort of behaviour from Conor McGregor something that you care about at all? Is that something you look into?
No. Listen, these guys are all grown men and women. They have their own lives. They do their own things. I don't get involved with any of that stuff.
Is there, at any point, is there something that a fighter would do or say that would cause an alarm bell in your head to go off at all? Or is that stuff, in your view, Dana, just not relevant whatsoever to a fighter's career or to their role within the UFC?
No. When they come in here and they perform whatever they have, listen, the world is a nutty place right now. So whatever goes on in their life, whatever their views or opinions are, whoever they support or don't support, it's absolutely, positively none of my business.
Even something like social media posts, which could be seen to incite riots.
Whatever they do, they're grown men and women. Mm-hmm. We're talking about grown-ups here. Listen, I don't get into all the political bullshit where you get sucked in by reporters and all this other stuff about, oh, what if this guy said this or what if this guy said that? Grow up, everybody. We're all grown men and women. They can handle their own business outside of the UFC.
And then as a grown man yourself, do you make a decision on that yourself where, listen, Conor McGregor can do what he wants or any fighter can do what they want, but I can make a decision on their future based on that?
Have you ever heard of Sean Strickland?
Yes.
Yeah, watch some of his videos, okay? Yeah. I don't agree with a lot of what Sean Strickland does, and I don't agree with a lot of things that he says. He's a grown man. He can say what he wants to say, and you know, in America, we have free speech, so they can do that stuff. It gets a little tricky when you go into other countries where free speech does not exist. But yeah, I'm a free speech guy.
Is that definitely the case, Dan? I mean, like there was a case a few years ago at this point where Ariel Helwani was temporarily barred from events involving the UFC. Doesn't seem like an overly free speech situation. There was an ESPN reporter last year, Jeff Wagenheim, who was told not to write anything incendiary on social media about your own situation, Dana. It doesn't really strike me as free speech.
Nobody was told to write anything. You're talking about people that I hate. I hate most of the media. They're all liars, and I'm not a big fan of media. So, yes, I butt heads with the media, if that's what you want to call them. I don't know if true media really exists. I think that you have, you know, different groups of people who have subscribers and they speak to their subscribers. I don't know if true media really exists anymore.
But
so yes, I am a free speech guy and nobody's ever been told not to say anything about me. This interview with you and I can go any way you want it to go. You can ask me any question you want.
Well, Owen, I'm standing on the edge of Dale Street and Castle Street, and I'm faced by a cordon of about 100 police officers, and just about 100 yards down to my left is where the incident took place, around about 19 minutes or so ago. It is, to be honest, quite a surreal atmosphere around Liverpool because I don't think the news has fully filtered through yet to the Liverpool supporters as to exactly what has happened and the severity of this incident. There is a lot of footage up on social media. People will have been able to see what happened with that car plowing into a group of Liverpool supporters. I actually watched the parade at the end of Dale Street, about 50 metres further down towards the Mersey from where the incident happened. And once the Liverpool bus went through, tens of thousands of people started to descend back in to the city centre. It was going at essentially a snail's pace. Everybody was just taking their time. It was an incredibly happy and incredibly joyous atmosphere. And then, unfortunately, at 6 o'clock, something terrible has happened. Now, having gone into the parade at about 3 o'clock, the road was cordoned off, certainly from the public, in that they were trying to push people down to other ends of the viewing spaces so that it wasn't too crowded. the car, it seems, was coming out of a car park, potentially, and how that happened as the crowds were there, because this incident happened certainly within 20 to 30 minutes of the parade coming to an end. So there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the vicinity at that moment. I've just spoken to a couple of Irish Liverpool supporters who were here and had the misfortune to witness the incident. And as he said, I've gone from maybe the happiest moment of my life to the worst moment of my life in the space of a couple of minutes. So there's no doubt that this is a very, very serious incident, and unfortunately a very sad and a very dark way to end what had been an incredibly joyous occasion for Liverpool supporters.
So what we do know is that a man has been detained. What we don't know is what injuries might have been caused, what casualties might have occurred here. I presume it's just pandemonium in terms of emergency vehicles trying to get in and out of the location of the incident?
It is, it is. As I said, lined up across from me are 7-8 ambulances, countless amounts of police vehicles. But at the same time, as I say, it's the strangest of atmospheres, because I was just walking down towards the bus station and Liverpool supporters were singing their songs. They were chanting Arne Slot's name, and I got a message in on my phone around this incident, had a look and came back down here. But I think the vast majority of people don't even realise what exactly has happened here. And as I'm standing here talking to you, I think the first of the victims are being rolled into the ambulances across me here, and the police are trying to push everybody back just to create a bit more space, I think, for the emergency services to get to work. But these are, in stark contrast, these scenes to a couple of hours ago. As I say, I've never seen so many people having such a good time. This has been built up to for many, many weeks. They're well used to having these sort of events in Liverpool. You think back to 2019 and the parade for the Champions League final, very similar scenes. There was a lot of security in place. But I will say it was very relaxed security, as you would expect. There was no searches or anything like that as you were walking into the main part of the parade. And this incident clearly has just come completely out of the blue and is going to cast a dark pall over everything that's gone on today. And we just hope, obviously, that the victims and a couple of people sitting up in wheelchairs there as they're being rolled in front of us, we hope that that there are no serious injuries and worse than that.
All right, you're very welcome to Corduff. We have a brand new favourite father-son combo in Irish sport. You're going to be familiar with the father of the family here, one Roddy Collins, friend of the show. Roddy, how are you keeping?
All good, all good.
Now, this is my first time here. Apparently, we're going through the centre, are we?
Yeah, we go through the centre up into the Mecca, the Collins Mecca of boxing.
Talk us through where we're going here now.
Well, this is Corduff Shopping Centre. It's in the Collins family the last 15 years. And it used to be a snooker hall upstairs. And my brother Pascal and Stephen converted into a professional boxing gym. So, yeah, this is where it all happens. He's three champions here at the minute, three Celtic champions here at the minute. So this is it. This is our private entrance.
Now, when Roddy says private entrance here, let me describe what the scene is. We've just walked through a centre. We've gone to the right when we've seen the deli counter and the coffee station. And there's basically this fire door that says no entry to the gym on a piece of paper sellotaped to the door. But we go through anyway and we turn around and there's this staircase inside this concrete alley and up we go.
This is our private entrance where we can come up, when it's shut. We can use it this way. I mean, my wife comes up and does a few weights in the mornings. And yeah, it's just basically a Collins little get together.
Right, you've got a few tickets to flog around here, I suspect, with the customers.
Yeah, all the girls have all bought tickets for the Friday. You're looking forward to Friday, aren't you? Yeah. The bus is leaving at the Bell at 6 o'clock. All right, and then a party back. Everyone bought tickets here.
Right.
Half a Corduff bought tickets as well, so it's a great community.
Fantastic.
We all support each other, so we're all looking forward to it on Friday night.
So the young fella's just upstairs here, is he?
He's up there, prepared now. His last few days, just cutting the weight down. Him and Pascal, it's an intense time for us back in the house, because it's all new. Well, it's not new to us in the sense that we had it with Stephen and Pascal as a professional, but when it's under your own roof and it's your own son, you're a little bit, very nervous. Let's be honest, I'm not going to hide the fact. Very, very nervous I am.
Well, here we are. Welcome to Mecca, as you say. Go on ahead there. Mecca here is the Celtic Warrior gym. This is Pascal Collins' gym. He is, of course, Roddy's brother. He's Steve Collins' brother. And he is, this week, Podge's coach. He's been getting him in shape for the last few months. And when I walk in, he's working with him in one of the two boxing rings that I have set up in the gym.
That's it. This is where it all happens. Last few days preparing. All the months in the last couple of years of hard work, it's all coming to a head the next few days, you know. So, it's just
brilliant.
It's indescribable. I honestly can't describe it. It's just unbelievable.
Brilliant.
This stage of my life, never thought it could reach the excitement and the anticipation levels and get that buzz and nerves back in your stomach again. It's just brilliant.
He played rugby up until the end of this season and ended up playing against one of my brothers. No problem. Didn't bother him. He went out and played a full match, and he wasn't going to sit it out, you know, which is very hard when nobody else knows, and my brother is there on the pitch, and he can't react and he can't jeopardize anything.
Yeah.
And that's a bitter pill to swallow, that somebody's life can continue to be totally normal when yours is in rubble.
Your brother's teammates probably said, "Thanks for joining our local rivals."
Yeah.
Well, I thought
exactly. Yeah. You know, like small town kind of syndrome in a sense, like, oh, you think you're better than us and and all this kind of stuff. And that's the hard part about that too, is in the aftermath, there has been nothing from any of those people to say, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry that we didn't realise."
I thought there'd be a queue at the door, no?
Yeah, not a peep from anybody to say, "Jesus Christ, I can't believe what has happened, we're disgusted," nothing. You know, even not for me, if they didn't know me on a personal level, that's fine. But, you know, Dermot played with them for years and like nothing, not an acknowledgement of, "Jesus Christ, we're so sorry."
Because I saw Mullingar Rugby Club released a statement around the time of the sentencing.
Yeah.
To the extent that they were deeply shocked and saddened.
Yeah. So they released a statement to the media. They didn't release a statement on any of their own public platforms or anything like that, but just to the media to say that they were shocked that he had been expelled in light of the sentencing or whatever, and that it was striving to create a very inclusive environment and all of that kind of stuff. That statement went out, and the next day my brother had to ask them to remove photos of Johnny Moran celebrating his 100 caps off their social media. So, yeah, it was kind of a hard time for me. I had a lot of sadness and anger, really, towards them, because the comfort I had the whole way through when he would play and I'd see these pictures of him up on social media playing and him being celebrated was, when they find out, they're going to be horrified. When they find out, they're going to be so sorry. But I didn't get that. And that was really disappointing.
Usually we have to chase guests to come on the show. They generally say no and we have to go and chase others. The interesting thing here is you reached out to us, which, we're privileged and thrilled to have you. So why did you do that? I know raising awareness that you're predominantly a male audience listening, I'm sure, without being cliched about things.
And so that was something that caught my attention. In the aftermath of all of this, I kind of was just, it was highlighted to me in the responses and stuff I got online and stuff like that, that it was like 95% women that had contacted me, and I had like thousands of messages from people, but there was like so little women, or so little men, and even less like younger men. It was all maybe like older men, you know, that might be grandfathers or fathers or whatever, and they could empathize and they could, but there was just this silence from a younger male demographic. And then I married that up with the statistics of, you know, likely offenders, and the age demographic of likely offenders is that younger male demographic. We're seeing that now, that under the age of 35, there's such a high level of offending in sexual violence in that age group. And I just thought, there's something not adding up here, you know, like, why can't we, that younger demographic, stand up against this and say, I don't agree with this. And I did a fundraiser for Tullamore and Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and I got a huge response to it. and I had shared it with influencers and all of that, and I had so many share it, and you could see when an influencer would share it, the total would just fly up. And I was trying to get male influencers to share it and male role models, and I just couldn't. I just wouldn't hear back from them, or they wouldn't share it, and I thought, this is really like strange. And I didn't take it personally. It wasn't anything like that, but I just thought as a societal thing, it was really interesting. And that's, I suppose, why I wanted to be able to share, I suppose, the reality of this to a younger male audience. I just thought it was a really good opportunity to maybe make them aware. I thought maybe they're not aware, maybe they're not accessing media in the same way that other people are or whatever. And, you know, and it's not a case of all men are bad and all men do this. And sure. That's not, nobody's saying that. And no. I'm certainly not saying that. But I do think there's opportunities there for men to do loads, really positive things to stop this happening, because it's happening so much. Like, I wish people could see into the victim support suites in the Central Criminal Court, because it is just full of sexual violence and rape cases. And for every case, that is somebody's life shattered. Yeah. And they're only the cases that are making it to there. You know, there's cases that don't have sufficient evidence. There's cases that are never reported. And their life is equally as shattered as mine, you know. Just because I got a guilty verdict doesn't give me any more validation than anybody else. But I just thought there was a real opportunity for a group to kind of look and say, oh, we could do more here.
And I know that you're probably going to be asked, and you have been asked a lot about like parallels between performing on the pitch, performing on screen. Yeah. What about heartbreak in your industry? It doesn't seem, it seems that it's quite...
That's a great question, yeah.
It seems quite unique to sport.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same. I don't know why that is, but I think with sport, and say you're auditioning for a role, the level of investment is totally different, because your investment in sport requires months and months and months of running figure eights in the winter. And when you're auditioning for a role, you're spending a lot of considered time, but it's 2-3 weeks, say max, if you're preparing for an audition. That can be really sore to take, but another audition will come in the next week or 2 weeks, whereas the championship is building up to like 60 minutes in May, June, and you're thinking about it from November. It's sore. It's
And it's minor. You don't get that season back.
You don't get that season back. And I knew kind of when I was getting into drama school that I kind of been brought into the senior panel setup, but I knew that for like the kind of pre-season of one season, and I was like, as much as I would love to give this a crack, the two worlds don't line up, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately, because I think
done all right.
yeah. But I would love to have at a certain point played senior football for my county. I got to play senior football for my club, but you've got to weigh up. They just don't line up, unfortunately.
The latter of those two things surely isn't a fanciful thing to think about at some stage. There's 40-something-year-olds playing club football.
I've been smoking too much. I'd have to get myself into good nick.
Junior B then.
Junior B, yeah, yeah.
Tony, talk to me of the greatest ever Man United team. Was it Greg, Burns, Jones, Edwards, Robson and Roy Keane? Was it Best, Law, Charlton, Styles and Eric Cantona? Because all the unknown pleasures of the doubles and the trebles and cantations from the stars. Tony, talk to me half pissed, talk to me half stoned. Talk to me as a boy when I'm sat inside my Fallowfield council home. Talk to me on the telly, then talk to me on the radio, and then talk to me at the opening of some arty-farty show. And talk to me a vision, virgin, victory and violence, but don't leave me siren hidden gem, just listen to the buzz of the silence. Talk to me of Warsaw, drug wars, trendy flats within warehouses, but when it comes to footy, Tony, don't talk to me about the Scousers and all the x-ray specs and all the x-ray tests and all the x-ray therapy.